Good evening and welcome to the show. This is Sports Takeover on RMU Radio. I'm Matt. With me is Chris, and we have plenty to discuss, so let's get to it. Let's start in the National Football League, where this is kind of older news at this point, but there are still things to be decided. Last Thursday was just absolute madness between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. It wasn't for the first 59 and a half minutes. For the last half minute or so, it certainly was. The Steelers lost the football game 21-7 to the Browns. First time ever the Cleveland Browns have knocked off both the Steelers and the Ravens in the same regular season. But it was the fourth quarter that had everybody talking. Myles Garrett hits Mason Rudolph late. It wasn't a sack. The ball was gone. The play was not over, but for that purpose it was. He takes Rudolph down. Rudolph's not happy about it. Pulls out his helmet. Not something Rudolph needs to do. Garrett retaliates by ripping Rudolph's helmet off. The two are separated. Rudolph comes back for more. Garrett hits him upside the head with his own helmet. And so we have suspensions everywhere. Chris, take it from here.
Myles Garrett is suspended indefinitely, at least the entirety of this season. Potentially in the next year. Depends upon what our good old buddy Roger Goodell wants to decide. I'm sure there's going to be appeals regardless. There's an appeal today, actually. I'm not sure what the outcome of that was. But either way, this is probably going to be long ongoing. Marquise Pouncey, center for the Steelers, he ended up pulling down Garrett after the fact, kicked him a lot, punched him. He got 3 games. Mason Rudolph, fined, undisclosed amount, no suspension for him. Larry Okunjobi, defensive tackle of the Browns, pushed Garrett down after the fact because, I don't know, why not, I guess. He got a game basically just for being an idiot. Steelers and Browns both fined $250,000. That's all the facts. Let's give a little bit of backstory to it. The game itself was pretty terrible. The Steelers looked awful. There wasn't a whole lot of chippiness going on, but there were two not clean hits made by the Browns, both on Steelers receivers. In the first half, Juju Smith-Schuster was going across the middle, which it wasn't the best route, and Rudolph basically was asking for him to get crushed by throwing it right into double coverage. His helmet got sandwiched between two Browns. He got concussed. He was out for the game. Later on in the game, Deontay Johnson, who was not in a dangerous position, was just going on a go route. Ball thrown to him again. A safety just came barreling out of nowhere. It was one of the worst helmet-to-helmets I've seen that didn't involve Vontaze Burfict. He didn't even, there really wasn't a play to be made on the ball. He kind of just made the play on Deontay Johnson's helmet. Johnson ended up bleeding from the ear. He was out of the game. That safety got ejected. Those two plays were pretty dirty, but they really didn't lead to much else until the very end. It was maybe 15 seconds left in the fourth quarter. It was over. We were down 14 at that point. Rudolph just dumped it off to a running back just for the sake of, I don't know why. I really don't. Should just need it and let it go. But by the way, he dumped it off, and Garrett got to him and kind of held on to him and pushed him to the ground, which Rudolph took exception to. Rudolph started pulling at his helmet. I think he was probably mad at the way the receivers were targeted earlier. And then it just escalated so far out of control from there. It was something I never saw before.
So real quick, to go back to the suspensions that you talked about, Ogunjobi's, I believe, was upheld today.
Yes.
At one game. Pouncey and Garrett, I believe, will be decided by the end of the week. The suspension to Garrett is interesting. I think in the heat of the moment, everybody felt that this was what was called for. There were plenty of people in post-game coverage saying he should be out for the year. Other players saying that he should be out for the year. I personally think that what he did certainly justifies him being out for the year. But what I read today was that his challenge is coming on the precedent that was set in 2013 when Antonio Smith of the Houston Texans did something very similar to Richie Incognito, then of the Dolphins, ripped his helmet off during a play, swung it at him. Now, after watching the two videos, I think what Garrett did was much more violent, much more aggressive, just in the nature that he swung the helmet. When Smith did it, it was kind of a horizontal swing across the face. Did not connect, I don't believe. Myles Garrett swung over the top, hit Rudolph in the head. Keyshawn Johnson made a point in the postgame coverage that had that been the crown of the helmet or just a different part of the helmet, this could be
Rudolph.
A very different story. Regardless, swinging a helmet is swinging a helmet, and unfortunately, the NFL is going to get this wrong one way or another because either one, they're going to ignore the precedent that they set in 2013 and uphold the suspension, or two, they're going to follow the precedent, which they messed up by giving Antonio Smith 2 preseason games and 1 regular season games as punishment for ripping off Richie Incognito's helmet and swinging it at his face. I don't see any world where two preseason games and one regular season game is a sufficient punishment for removing a player's helmet and swinging it back at them, whether it be as aggressive as what Myles Garrett did or not. So do I think Garrett's suspension is justified, just not, you know, not looking at a precedent, just looking at what he did and what he got? Yes, I think it is. However, given what the NFL has ruled in the past, sure, this could be longer. It could be a 3-4 game, something like that. Regardless, he's going to miss more regular season games and more paychecks than Smith did. But with this precedent, I don't think you can uphold the indefinite suspension to Myles Garrett.
You make a really good point. There's a big difference, though, that it wasn't a quarterback, and Incognito did have problems in the past, so I guess that maybe play into it. The whole thing they're trying to do with quarterbacks is overprotect them, which they're succeeding at. I mean, they call roughing the passer if you so much as hit your forearm into the guy's helmet, which, I mean, I would guess 99% of the time that happens is accidental. I don't think people are swinging their arms at the helmets. However, swinging a helmet at somebody's head is entirely intentional. It entirely deserves, at least this season, I agree with that. But the precedent's weird, though. I just think that
It's nothing. It's nothing for using a helmet as a weapon.
It's not, no. And it doesn't make sense why that happened. I'm surprised it didn't get as much attention as it did when I'm guessing that game was probably a 1 o'clock game between two teams that didn't make a difference versus a primetime game all in its own spotlight. That would just be my guess. I don't remember the exact situation. I didn't see the video either. But if they have a precedent like this set, it needs to be overrun, because what happened last week was unprecedented. It was just different. It felt different. It was a different context to it. He took it off. I mean, like you said about Keyshawn Johnson, if he used the crown of the helmet, Rudolph could be concussed or even worse. I mean, a helmet's at least like 5 or 6 pounds, and Myles Garrett is one of the strongest men in the National Football League. There's no doubt in my mind he can swing that harder than anybody I've ever met in my life. So the fact that Rudolph actually came away fine is very good.
A miracle for him.
Yeah, I think if Rudolph gets injured in some way, I think Garrett's probably done from the league. I think
maybe
they would just go full sail on it. But thankfully, Rudolph only got hit with like basically the opening, like around the neck too, which I guess if you're going to get hit with a helmet, that's probably the best place to get hit with it if you had to choose, which Rudolph really didn't get the opportunity to choose. But either way, it's wild.
It is. So a couple other points here. The one other thing I did read regarding his appeal, the appeal by Myles Garrett, is that my understanding, and I didn't look into this fully, so I don't have all the information, but it sounded like in the collective bargaining agreement, an indefinite suspension for an act that happened on the football field is not an option.
No, it's not.
So again, how the NFL can justify this suspension, I don't know. And I'll be anxious to see if they try to, or if they do change it, or what happens. I mean, certainly I think he's deserving of this, but I don't think that given what the NFL has in place, I don't think that they can. The other thing is, obviously Garrett was not the only one involved. He was the most violent and certainly will be the longest suspended. But obviously there were lots of different things that went into play. The undisciplined hits early in the game, Mason Rudolph's actions played some role.
He instigated it a little bit.
I wouldn't say he started it. I mean, because it to me started with the late hit by Myles Garrett.
But yes, certainly I agree with that.
At that moment in the game, he did not help his own cause. He did not make things better. He probably shouldn't have even been in the game. I mean, there's not really a reason to be running plays or throwing passes. He shouldn't have been in that position anyway, but he was. He did not respond well. He kind of said that today. Obviously, Pouncey gets 3 games. Punches, kicks, yeah, that'll do it. It's justified. I don't think anybody blames Pouncey for what he did.
No.
But certainly he deserves the suspension as well. He appealed to try to get that down to 1 or 2, so we'll see if that happens or not. And, of course, the fines are well-deserved. I believe everybody who came off the bench to be a part of that action was fined. I don't know what that was or how many players that turned out
Money
to be.
Money being thrown left and right.
Yeah.
But the thing about Pouncey, I think that I read this, someone said that I thought was a good point. They probably want to keep him out of the next Browns game, which is in 2 weeks. So
right.
You got to give the guy at least 2 games. I personally thought 1 game and a $100,000 fine, that probably would have been good in my opinion, because if your offensive lineman doesn't react this way when your quarterback gets attacked with his helmet, then I don't want this guy on my team. He stepped up. He's a guy that showed his true character and is a good character as far as the Steelers are concerned. The one thing that I do want to make a comparison to is, do you remember when – so the Steelers played the Chargers earlier this year. Remember at the end of the game when Phillip Rivers freaked out on Mike Hilton?
Yeah.
Like, he grabbed him and tugged him around. Did Mike Hilton rip at his helmet? No, Mike Hilton put his hands up, said, I'm not doing nothing. Phillip Rivers can yell at me and push me around all I want. I'm just going to accept this W and put my hands up, and then nothing happened from it because Hilton didn't lose his cool. And Garrett's had a history this season. He's had, I think, three different 15-yard unsportsmanlike or personal foul penalties.
Yeah, he's been fined twice already.
Yeah, he is – I wouldn't say he's, like, exactly an aggressive player, but he might have anger issues, I guess. Like, he's not on the same level as Ndamukong Suh or Albert Haynesworth. Like, he doesn't go around like, ugh, it's that guy again. I mean, he plays hard, but I wouldn't say he plays dirty, per se. Either way, though, with the track record he's accrued, it's hard to see it any other way now. So, Steelers sucked. Everything about this really just sucks.
Two more things I want to say about this. The Pouncey suspension, Ogunjobi's was held up at one game. I would argue that if Pouncey's gets reduced, it won't go below two because I think punches and kicks certainly is worse than a late hit on Mason Rudolph.
Two's fine.
So I would be surprised if he goes down to that level, but I could still see it going to two. Also, credit to, I believe it was David DeCastro on the Steelers, and I don't know who it was from the Browns, for doing their part to peacefully separate the madness. DeCastro was the one attempting to keep Garrett away from Rudolph in the first place. And then again, kind of afterwards, and there was a Browns defensive lineman, I believe, that kind of separated Pouncey from the group peacefully. Like, both of them did not throw any punches. They didn't grab anybody. They just tried to be mediators. So for what it's worth, credit to those two guys for doing their part to put an end to what was just an ugly scene late in the game.
And what should have been a game that propelled the Steelers to 6-4 and in the wild card conversation even further was a game that dropped them to 5-5. And just kind of solidified that there's a lot of teams in the AFC, very few good teams, a lot of good NFC teams. We talked about this a few weeks ago. It was the power rankings. We ranked our top eight in the entire league. We thought there's been a few weeks. We've seen some of these teams play better opponents, have a better, maybe a better perception. Who's to say, really? Either way, we're going to try our best. So, Matt, want to kick them off?
Yeah, sure. So we talked about this a little bit. I think there's a lot of teams at the top here who are beginning to separate themselves. I would say my team here at number eight is not so much separating themselves, but they are, in a way, in their own little world. I think they're the only team sitting at 7-4.
They are.
Half a game above the 6-4 madness. The Kansas City Chiefs, to me, this extra win puts them slightly above some of these other teams that are so-so. I think you look at teams like the Colts, teams like the Texans, and you see teams like the Cowboys at 6-4 that it's really hard to get a grasp on. I think the Chiefs are a little bit like that, but just a little bit better. They do have Patrick Mahomes and a fantastic offense, so they're number eight.
Yeah, I have them at number eight as well. Like you said, 7-4 is kind of funny that they're the only team at that point. They haven't had a bye yet, though. They'll get that this week, get a chance to relax. Mahomes did miss some time with knee injury early in the year. Could have been a lot more, thankfully, for his sake, though. It was only, what, 2.5 games, I think?
Something like that, not much.
I think the Chiefs went 2-1 in those games that he didn't finish. The game he left, they won, and then they split the next two. So they did well enough. I mean, 7-4 is good enough. Half a game lead on the Raiders, which is, it's interesting. They do play the Raiders later in the season, so that could definitely affect it down the road. But as it stands right now, they are leading their division. I would take them against, clearly, as the way I'm ranking it, 75% of the NFL right now. So number eight sounds good for me for them. Now here's where the fun comes into it. The AFC has two really good teams that we're going to get to later, and the NFC has all the rest in the middle. Number seven for me is the Vikings. They sit at 8-3, but boy, last week they tried their best to go to 7-4 against the Broncos. Kirk Cousins led a very good comeback against a team led by Vic Fangio that cannot get the job done once again. 8-3 is very good. It's good for second place in their division. They've won some good games. They looked not so great earlier in the season, but the way Cousins and Stephon Diggs have been playing recently, the defense is coming together. This is a team that certainly has potential to make noise in the playoffs, if not for all the great teams above them. If they were in the AFC, they would probably be in the top four. However, they're just in a better conference, so they have to sit at 7.
Yeah, miraculously, at 8-3, they hold the last wild card spot, which is insane. They are also my number 7 team. Games like last week always confuse me because I'm never sure if I should be extra enthusiastic about the team that makes the comeback or a little bit nervous because they had to make the comeback. But I like the Vikings. I've liked the Vikings for the better part of the last 2 years.
Skull.
And they really are a solid overall team. Kirk Cousins is looking more and more like the quarterback they wanted him to be. He's got weapons all around him on offense. That defense is solid. Mike Zimmer is a fantastic defensive coach, as I have said many times before, and will probably continue to say. I do like the Vikings a lot. I have them at number 7 as well.
Thing about the NFL is any team can win on any given Sunday. It's a little bit different than college football. There's going to be close games like this, but the good teams come out on top of those. You might lose one here and there, but Vikings took away last week. Number 6, I have the second wild card team, the NFC. That is the Seattle Seahawks, who is my version of your Vikings. Russell Wilson is doing great things. He's in the MVP conversation, has been all season for a reason. He has done excellent for them. This is a year that I don't think people were expecting a whole ton for them. We saw the Legion of Boom kind of start to fall away the last few years and pretty much ended last season. Now they have Bobby Wagner and they have a lot of new guys that haven't been here before, but at 8-2, they're getting to a place of experience very fast. The offense is clicking. Maybe if Chris Carson wouldn't fumble so much, they would be higher than 6th. They've lost to some good teams. What, they lost to Baltimore, and who was the other team they lost to? Do you remember?
Ooh, let me see.
Off the top of your head.
Keep going. Let me see if I can find it.
You're throwing me on the spot. Receivers are doing well. Tyler Lockett, I believe, is top 5, and he was at least going the last week top 5 in the league in receiving. A lot of great defensive players. They played the Niners and beat them.
They lost to the Saints.
Okay, so they lost to the Saints and they lost to Baltimore, who are 16-4 combined. So those are two excellent losses to have. And clearly they've beaten some good teams along the way too. So unfortunately for them, they sit at number 6 just because they are second in their division in the wild card.
I also have them at number 6. I see a little bit of a trend here early on in our power rankings.
That I do too.
This is one of two teams that I have in this power ranking that I am reluctant to accept is at the top of the NFL, but I'm going to because I have to at this point at 8-2. It's hard to argue with them
all season.
Here's the thing with the Seahawks, right? Russell Wilson is playing at an MVP level, like you said, and I am absolutely ready to give him all the credit he deserves because he's deserved it for a long time. The thing that gets me still is I didn't feel like he had the weapons around him on offense, and I didn't feel like that defense was good enough. That defense carried them when they were competing for Super Bowls. Russell Wilson did his part. Now it's Russell Wilson carrying them, but everybody around him is doing their part, which I did not think was going to happen. Yeah?
It just hit me right now.
Okay.
First few Super Bowls the Patriots won with Tom Brady, he was okay. Defense was very good. The middle years, he was excellent, throwing 50 touchdowns. Defense kind of lacked. Maybe the Seahawks are going to be the same. That's a bold comparison. A lot of time left, but it does make sense to me, though.
I mean, if you've got a defense that can carry you, then lay off the offense a little bit. You know, build that defense. Put your money in certain places and strategically build that team. And if Russell Wilson can do this kind of thing and play at an MVP level, then you can afford to maybe give him an extra weapon or two and take some away from the defense. Whatever they're doing, though, in Seattle, it's working.
It all starts with Pete Carroll. It'll keep going that way for hopefully 10 more years. He's excellent for them.
Number 5, I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. Also an 8-2 team. They slipped up a couple weeks ago against the Chargers, but overall they've been a very solid, very impressive team. I would say Aaron Rodgers is another one that's playing at an MVP level. Certainly this is a little bit of a bounce back year for the Packers, unlike it has been for the Seahawks, who have kind of been, you know, competitive for the last few years. Rodgers has had some injuries. The Packers have had some losing seasons, but they have a new coach. They have a healthy quarterback. They're playing well. They're leading their division. I like the Packers.
And my number 5, I have the Saints. It was close.
Yes, we do have a difference.
Yeah,
finally.
Very good. The Saints and Packers are very close for me. Either of them could have been 4 or 5. I mean, they both lead their divisions at 8-2. Both have lost to a bad team. You said Green Bay lost to the Chargers. The Saints followed up with a loss to, the Falcons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an ugly loss, too.
Yeah.
The weird thing to me about the Saints, I couldn't put them higher because when they had Teddy Bridgewater, they went 5-0. Now, I'm not saying they're 3-2 because they have Drew Brees, but for some reason, the team doesn't seem to be clicking as well with Drew Brees. I don't know if it's just the fact that the teams they've played are better or if they're calling the game a little bit different. I mean, but there was a time when Kamara and Brees were both out, and it was Latavius Murray and Teddy Bridgewater, and they looked like they both played in Minnesota, didn't they? They played at the same time?
Who did you say? Bridgewater and who?
Latavius Murray. Was he in Minnesota then?
That might have been more recent than Bridgewater.
Yeah, that might be it. But either way, they played well with two backups, and now that their stars are back, they don't look as explosive as we've seen before. That's why I was reluctant to put them higher than 5. However, like I said, though, Green Bay, they're right there above them. I have them at 4. just because Rodgers had looked really good all season. The defense is really strong. They lost the Eagles too, but that was a close game, and the Eagles are such an up and down team that that could have been the 13-3 Eagles and not the 3-13 like they seem to be in other weeks. So I don't really fault them for that loss. The Chargers loss was just ugly, but sometimes it happens. You move past it. Leading their division, it's a what we thought was going to be a stronger division has ended up not being so great. However, at 8-2, I think they're good enough for fourth.
My number four is going to be the Saints. Same thing, very similar. You talked about their slip up against Atlanta. I would say, just to go with your point about Bridgewater versus Breeze, I think there's probably a little bit more of a sense of urgency when Teddy Bridgewater's your quarterback, a little bit more of a, we have to help this guy out. Kind of like in hockey when you're losing in a game and you pull your goalie and the backup comes in and a team starts playing a little bit better because it's a wake-up call. It's, we're not playing well enough, we got to help this guy out, whatever. You're more comfortable with your regular starter, and I think that could be part of what it is. For Breeze, you did miss time while everybody else is finding a rhythm, so he's kind of got to find his rhythm.
That's a good point.
He may not have been 100% healthy, maybe 90% healthy when he came back, so there could be that element to it as well. So I think there's a number of reasons, and like you said, the opponent could be it as well. I mean, Atlanta's not a good team, but division games, I always think, don't matter. Records don't matter as much. It's a division game, it's a rivalry. No. things are different. So I certainly think the Saints are okay. I think they're fine. But yeah, there's a mess of teams in here at 8-2, and I think you could make an argument for any of them to be in any order, but I'll put the Saints at 4.
You said 8-2 teams. Where are we going to order them? Well, there's only one more team left that we have to throw in at number 3. It's the Baltimore Ravens. We were reluctant when we did the power rankings a few weeks ago to include them this high. Do we both have them? Do you recall?
Yeah, we both had them. I think I had them around 5.
I think, yeah, I might have had them around 5 or 6.
Somewhere in there.
However, putting them outside the top 3 at this point in the season, I think, is impossible. Lamar Jackson is playing at an MVP level. But what's most important to me is, we talked about in the offseason how they had defense after defense after defensive players jump ship. Eric Weddle was gone. They lost 2 or 3 linebackers. Yeah, C.J. Mosley and either Preston or Za'Darius Smith, one of the two.
Za'Darius Smith, yeah. And Green Bay.
So there's 3 starters on defense they've lost. And they were shaky in the earlier parts of the year. They gave up 40 to Cleveland, and that was not a strong Cleveland team at that point. You made the division comment before, though, so I guess that can be the excusable reason for that. However, though, they have just looked so strong. They beat the Patriots. They're the only team to do that. They beat the Seahawks, one of only 2 teams to do that. And last week in a game where I picked Deshaun Watson, the Texans.
As did I.
Yeah, so you're with me on this one. They looked as good as the Cincinnati Bengals did. The Ravens just stomped them. They held them so aggressively, and they ran all over this Texans defense like it was just practice. Harbaugh had his job up in the air with Joe Flacco. However, he can lock himself into however long of a contract that Lamar Jackson is going to lock himself into, because with them two together, it's really hard to see a team that can stop the Ravens at this point. I liked them a lot last year going into the wild card. I think they were just a little bit too young and inexperienced. However, coming into his, now he's played at least 16 games, I think 17 at this point. He's 13-14-3. Jackson is as the starter in the NFL. That's very good. That you cannot overlook that fact. They are doing good things, and I don't want to play them later in the season. I don't think any team does. So, number 3, but I'm sure there's plenty of room for them to go up.
At number 3, I have the 49ers sitting at 9-1. I think we talked last week about the questionable strength of schedule that they are boasting at this point. They've kind of had to survive the Cardinals this past week, which is not a great football team.
Even two weeks ago, they only won by 3 against them.
Yeah, they've played some closer games recently. I still think I believe in this team as much as I did before the regular season began, probably a little bit more as I had them in a wild card position, and they're sitting at 9-1. Certainly, I think, I don't know, they're right there with all those 8-2 teams, though, in the NFC. This NFC is just so good. And I think really the ones that are going to shine come playoff time are the ones that are tested throughout the regular season. The 49ers obviously have the Seahawks again. They have a Rams team that's
a
very good team, even though their record may not entirely reflect that. So they have their share of tests. We will see what they do in those games. But it's still a team that I like a lot. They could easily be number 2. When I talk about my number 2 team, they could easily be there. that was the last decision I made when I made these rankings, was who would be two and who would be three. So certainly they could be in either of those positions. They look good. I need to see a little bit more to put them all the way at the top.
And the thing is, they currently sit atop the NFC, but if they lose and the Seahawks win this week, they drop to fifth.
The wild card.
It's crazy
in the NFC.
There's so little room. Do you want to go to your number two now?
Sure, I'll go to my number two, the New England Patriots.
Ooh.
Also at 9-1. Kind of similar reason as the Niners that I don't have the Patriots at number one is it's a little bit of a weaker schedule. The AFC East is not good. I mean, the Bills are at 7-3. The Patriots took care of them. The other two teams in that division just are not strong teams. The AFC in general is not that strong. I mean, obviously, look at this list. We haven't had an AFC team on the list since number 8. And even when we talked about the Chiefs, we were like, just a little bit better than but not
default.
By much. So I think the Patriots, I mean, the one really big test they saw was the Ravens, and they lost by 17 points. So I think the Patriots 9-1 could be called into question just a little bit as well.
Okay, at number two, I have the Niners. You hit all the good points about them. It's just in the NFL, your record is what gets you to the Super Bowl. You need to win games. Yes, the Niners have not played as strong of teams, but they're 9-1. It's very good. They're a good team. I would take them. Anybody in the top five, I think, could beat each other. However, just for the fact that they have 9 wins, you kind of have to just separate them for now. I don't feel confident that they would beat Green Bay or New Orleans or Seattle. When they played Seattle a few weeks ago, I picked the Seahawks in that game. But at 9-1, their defense is really, really good. Bosa is unbelievable. Richard Sherman looks like the Richard Sherman we saw when he was on the Seahawks. Jimmy G, yeah, a little bit slow. They do lean on the run game. But when he has to, he makes the difference. He can make it count. They're scary. You bought into them significantly before I did, but 9-1, the proof is right there. You can't not accept what this team has done. Similar to the Patriots, who are my number one at 9-1, you can't accept what they have done, not accept what they've done. Tom Brady looks like he is 41 years old, but for him being 41 years old, it is tremendously better, I think, than any other player has really looked in their career. Maybe Peyton Manning at the end of his career, similar. This defense is aggressive. The only team they couldn't stop was the Ravens, so hopefully for their sake they don't play the Ravens come postseason. But they're just firing on all cylinders. A close game against the Eagles last week. It was only 17-7, but their defense was able to suppress a Eagles offense that we probably think should be better than they're putting on the field, at least right now. They've had injuries, yes. But either way, this defense scores just as much as some teams' offenses do. And when it comes down to it, Tom Brady's a good guy to have back there if you need a quarterback to make plays for you. So they're my number one.
Yeah, my number one is reluctantly the Baltimore Ravens. This is the other team that I didn't necessarily want to buy into throughout the season. But I looked at the updated NFL power rankings on, I think it was Bleacher Report, and they had the Ravens at number one. And I looked at that and I was like, no. And then I thought about it and I was like, yeah, maybe. I guess so. Looking at this team, they're on a 6-game win streak. And just to rattle off some recent scores, Ravens 30, Seahawks 16, Ravens 37, Patriots 20, Ravens 49, Bengals 13, Ravens 41, Texans 7.
These are college football scores.
There's a lot of teams on the losing end of those games that are good football teams. The Seahawks, the Patriots, we talked about it, the Texans and Deshaun Watson. Bengals not so much, but that's okay. They got shellacked like they were supposed to. Point is the Ravens are taking care of business in a big way right now. I have a tough time making an argument to have them lower than this. 8-2, the fact that they're not first in the conference, I guess, could be an argument for it. But at 6 straight wins and those kind of margins of victory, I think it's tough to argue with. And I'm going to reluctantly accept that the Baltimore Ravens are here to stay this season, and they are number one in my power rankings.
Just to put it out there, last year in the playoffs, I had them as the AFC representative, and I was very wrong, but at least I had an idea.
I suppose.
Because of Lamar Jackson, there's quarterbacks that lead a lot of these teams, so that got us to thinking, okay, over the last few years, there have been a lot of teams who can't figure out who their quarterbacks are. However, some teams have a very strong grip on who their quarterback is and is for the next several years, so we decided to come up with our top five quarterbacks over the last few years. Few is not a number because it is not. I don't have any numbers backing up anything. This is all just the general how I feel about these guys relevant to football ability, whether it's playmaking or winning or your stats or leading an offense or leadership, whatever. Those all five can get thrown into one just, here's my five. I'm not backing up with anything other than what I think. So number five, I have Drew Brees. Saints have come up short only for the fact that they don't know how to call pass interference, but he gets it done year in and year out. He's thrown for more yards than anybody else in the NFL. Completion percentage is always ridiculously high. The Saints offense always has a bunch of random receivers besides Michael Thomas, and he just finds them and makes them into names. He's been really good for a while. Hasn't won a Super Bowl in about, it's been like 10 years now. It's been a while since he won a Super Bowl, actually. But he's very reliable, very good. Number five for me.
Let it be said that these lists are very loosely put together. We don't have numbers behind them. We're going off feelings. We've defined the time frame as the last few years, so you can make lots of different arguments. The direction I'm going to go, I think, will be a little bit different than yours, and I have Patrick Mahomes at number five. He's the reigning MVP, and he's been absolutely fantastic in the last year and a half. The only reason I don't have him higher is because it's a very small sample size. It's a year and a half of Patrick Mahomes as a starting quarterback. Regardless of the sport, regardless of the position, for me, I need to see a little bit more time. I need to see a little bit more in terms of production, in terms of games. I need to see it sustained. And so Mahomes is not higher on my list, but because he was so phenomenal last year and because he does have an MVP under his belt, he has to go on this list. So I have him at five.
So looking at my list, I think I figured out it's quarterbacks I'm going to take now to win me games based on how they've done. That just seems to be the way I've composed my list. Number four, I have Lamar Jackson. He was one of the last quarterbacks selected in the first round last year, yet he is by far the best out of this class. But, I mean, he's had a very good offensive coordinator believing in him. He gets the job done. He wins games. He has been called a running back. Thought he should have been turned to a receiver by many wrong people. I thought he was a good quarterback coming out of college. I didn't think he was the best, but I thought he was better than a Josh Rosen or a Josh Allen. I probably would have put him with Baker right there, and I thought Sam Darnold was better, and I'm still waiting on that day. But you can't argue against what he's done this year. I mean, every week he goes out there, nobody's game planning around him. I don't know what to do to stop this guy. He runs like Michael Vick. He throws like Patrick Mahomes. He can command an offense. He's just doing it all just for the fact that he's only played a year and a half, basically. He has to be lower at number four, but come back to this list next year. He might be up higher.
At number four, I have Tom Brady. Obviously, he's not been as flashy this year or as productive this year, but he is getting older. However, it still stands that he did just win a Super Bowl. He has won six Super Bowls. The Patriots are very good and have been for as long as he's been the quarterback. And so for me, I'm going to look a little bit more in the past than in the future, I think, on this, just in terms of buying quarterbacks as at the top of the league. Lamar Jackson has been phenomenal all year. He is not going to be on my list because it's such a small sample size. He realistically has only been the starter for about the equivalent of a full season.
That's fair.
And so I need to see more from him than that. I'm also not super convinced with some of the teams that they've played. Regardless, back to Tom Brady, he's been able to get the job done for a long time. And if it came down to it this year, I would still feel comfortable having him as my quarterback.
A guy I feel more comfortable having than Tom Brady. Well, all these guys, I guess I do technically. He's not on my list, but that's fine. It's a guy that wears number 12 that gets a lot of comparisons to him. It is Aaron Rodgers. He is doing very well this year for Green Bay. Last year, Green Bay kind of sucked, but he wasn't the best. There wasn't a whole lot working for him. New coach, new system, a bunch of random receivers. He's been without, Devontae Adams. He's missed some time this year, but he's been back and forth with being injured and such. Yet, Aaron Rodgers is doing very well. Has a Super Bowl a little bit more recently than Drew Brees, so that's why I can throw
him 1 year more recently.
Yes, but I don't know. It just seems that the Packers have been at the top more consistently than the Saints have. The Saints had a few years in the middle.
They had some weird down years.
They had some years where their defense was the worst in the league. The Packers have at least been wholly a team consistently. And like we talked about last year on the show, there were a few night games where he just led that Packers team to remarkable comebacks. So he is slotting it at number three.
Number three for me is Drew Brees. He's always at the top. when you have these conversations. He could have been the MVP last year had Patrick Mahomes not been just absolutely ridiculous. And we talked about that on the show last year. He's a guy that's been consistent for as long as he's been with the Saints, even before that when he was with the Chargers. That's going back before my knowledge of Drew Brees and football. But just based on what I've seen, obviously, in the last decade or so since he's won that Super Bowl, he's been very good. And certainly the injury slows him down a little bit this year, missed some games, but he would still be at that top of that list for me.
And he's old, too, and he's still getting it done, so kudos to him. Number two is my favorite quarterback in the league, and that is?
Russell Wilson.
Absolutely. He has a Super Bowl more recently than both of these two guys. Should have had a second one if he would have just handed the ball off to Marshawn Lynch, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about his on-the-field product that just seems to get every better each year he goes out there. He is just throwing so many more touchdowns this year than we've seen in years past. They've always been a run-first team, yet it seems that when you take away Doug Baldwin, which had been his best receiver, it's almost like he's doing better. It's weird. It's hard to explain. Yes, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are good. They haven't been as strong for as long. Like, Doug Baldwin was there, was his guy, had Jimmy Graham for a little bit. That didn't work out, so he's no longer there, and he is just getting it done. He was more mobile in his earlier years, but now he's kind of funneling into the pocket passer mentality, but he can still get it done on the ground when he needs to get it done. And like I said, when you have Pete Carroll as your coach, good things will happen to you. Russell Wilson has at least 5 to 10 more years in this league of excellence, so I'm excited to see what more he's going to do. He's my number two.
He's my number two as well.
Oh,
we
very
do
nice.
Have one match on
very
this
nice.
List. He is playing at an MVP level. He does have a Super Bowl. He is consistently winning. The Seahawks have not been bad for as long as he's been there. They haven't even really been average. They've kind of been
They missed the playoffs
above
once,
average
but they were
year.
Above 500.
Yeah, what he's doing this year makes him arguably the best quarterback right now. You can make a case for a few guys looking at just this year, but certainly he's up there. And again, he doesn't get enough credit for the things he does. I think he is getting that now that the defense isn't as good as it was. But for me, yeah, he's number two.
And number one for me will be Patrick Mahomes. He has, I think, the best talent of any quarterback in the NFL right now. His arm strength is remarkable. His accuracy is there. He has the ability to extend plays. He can just run all around the pocket. He has some wheels. I mean, it's not quite like Lamar Jackson, but he scrambles every now and then. He's a good playmaker. He was the MVP last season, kind of came out of nowhere. When you think the Bears drafted Mitchell Trubisky ahead of him, you got to wonder what Chicago was thinking when you see what Mahomes has done. Andy Reid is a very good coach, though, for offenses. Was good with Donovan McNabb back in Philadelphia about 15 years ago. Similar situation with Mahomes right now. If you put him on the field, their defense has always been questionable, but there's no doubt in my mind that he will help this team put up 20, 30 points a game. He just knows how to get it done. Really bright future ahead for him in the Chiefs. He's my number one right now.
Number one for me is Aaron Rodgers. I almost put Russell Wilson in this slot, but for me, Aaron Rodgers, although he did have some injuries recently, he is also playing at an MVP level this year. If you look at his touchdown to interception ratio over the course of his career, very few years does he go into the double digits in terms of interceptions. He's very good protecting the ball, very good making plays happen, the Hail Marys, the late game heroics. Everything that he does is just absolutely phenomenal. He does have the Super Bowl. He is helping lead this Green Bay resurgence. To me, if I had tried to do my best to combine this season with the past, and for me, Aaron Rodgers is number one in that. He just has been really good, and I don't know that there's been a quarterback that we've talked about more. Maybe Mahomes, but like I said, I need a bigger sample size. Very few quarterbacks have we talked about more than Aaron Rodgers in terms of taking over a game and doing it himself. This is a tough sport to do that in, and he has found a way to do it at times, so he's my number one.
Unfortunately, no Big Ben on this list. I was close to putting Dak Prescott on the list for, I don't know why, I just felt good about him for some reason. Didn't put Tom Brady, he was close too. You got any close submissions on yours?
Not really. Lamar Jackson was the only other one I considered just because he's played so well this year, but sample size is too small for me.
All right, so similar to most of the other things we do, pretty similar list, but a little bit of difference to it. One last note on football. College football happened this past week, but not really that much happened. Top four in the college football playoff is still the same. LSU's one, Ohio State's two, Clemson's three, Georgia's four. None of those teams lost. Two undefeated teams lost that I think we kind of expected probably to lose. Minnesota lost to number eight. Minnesota lost to number 20. Iowa was 23-19. Like we said last week, Iowa didn't beat any really good teams yet at home this year. So this was their turn.
It's bound to happen.
Yeah, it seems every year they do it. They decide to make it Minnesota because Minnesota was good this year. And in the Big 12, which was a little bit more of an exciting game, undefeated number 13 Baylor went down to number 10 Oklahoma 34-31. Much like the Atlanta Falcons, they blew a 28-3 lead, which is a really good comeback for Oklahoma. We would be having a bigger segment this week if Oklahoma didn't come back. However, as expected, though, Baylor just they didn't play really any real teams yet. Oklahoma, strong. Jalen Hurts, really good. Led a ridiculous comeback, so good for them. Obviously, Minnesota and Baylor fell a little bit. Oklahoma, I think, maybe went up to 9. Not really that much of a change there. You have anything else to add, really?
Two more notes. Number 4, Georgia knocks off number 12, Auburn, 21-14, solidifying their spot for now in the college football playoff. Tua Tagovailoa out for the season with a hip injury, quarterback for Alabama.
Big problem.
Heisman contender. Trouble for Alabama. We'll see. Hopefully things work out all right for Tua, whether it be in the draft or back at Alabama next year. Hopefully he's expected for a full recovery, so hopefully everything's okay with him.
Yeah, Alabama's playoff hopes might be dashed. That was a big football segment. We're going to need some time to unwind for that, so please bear with us while we take our quick break, but we got a lot more coming up.
Welcome back to the show, Sports Takeover. Matt and Chris here on RMU Radio. Before we get in the second part of the show here, we do want to make a quick comment about NASCAR. I will let Chris do that because you know how much he loves NASCAR. Chris, go ahead.
Kyle Busch, your 2019 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion, won the second title of his career, edging out Martin Truex, Kevin Harvick, and Denny Hamlin this past week at Homestead, Miami. Busch finished first, Truex finished second, Harvick was fourth, Hamlin was 10th. They were the only four in contention to win. Kyle Busch was the one that won, second one of his career. Hadn't won in 21 races this season leading up to that race, so people were saying, come on, what's Kyle Busch? When's he going to win? I was saying that a lot as I picked him week in and week out to no avail. However, he got it done the one week that I didn't pick him when it mattered the most, so congrats to him. One more note about NASCAR. Jimmy Johnson, 7-time champion, tied for the most in NASCAR's history. 2020 will be his last full-time season. He branded it on Twitter as the Chase for 8, and I'm all for it. It's going to be his farewell tour. So big shift in NASCAR coming with the departure of Johnson next year.
Yeah, he's been such a household name for NASCAR fans and non-NASCAR fans alike. So the fact that it's the end for him is a little bit strange. Speaking of the end to things.
Oh, there's a lot of ends to be discussed.
We have an end. Obviously, this is about, this is over a month old at this point. An end to the Pirates season, which we never really talked about. But it's also the end of an era for the Pirates and the start of a new one. And so we felt that this was a good time to bring them up. Obviously, 2019 was a year to forget. 69-93, dead last in the Central. Solid performances by Josh Bell, by some of the rookies that the Pirates brought up throughout the course of the year, really played the majority of the year with the team. Pitching was just horrible, and that was really the downfall of this team, along with the post-All-Star game slump. But there's lots of changes to be had.
Yeah, let's just hit the ground running. Manager Clint Hurdle, bench coach Tom Prince, pitching coach Ray Searidge, president Frank Coonley, GM Neil Huntington, assistant GM something Stark, I don't remember his first name. That's seven guys I counted right there. Six? Seven.
You're the one counting. I don't know. What are you doing over there? The point is they're all gone.
All gone.
They're all out of here.
Swept out. It was weird, too. They did it in such a odd fashion. Hurdle was fired an hour before the last game.
Which is still ridiculous. I'm still not happy about that, but that's a discussion for another time.
That's just more of the inadequacies of the organization.
He's been there for how long now? Let him finish the year. There's one game left. It doesn't mean anything. Just let him finish. Sorry, I'm done.
Bench coach Tom Prince got to manage the last game, and after his 0-1 tenure as Pirates manager, he was also let go. That's fine. Pitching coach Ray Searidge, his time was up because Tyler Glass now, Charlie Morton, and Garrett Cole are all excellent. Two of those guys finished in the top three in Cy Young voting. All three of those guys no longer play for the Pittsburgh Pirates, yet they are acting as if when they were with this team, they weren't being pitched or coached very well. Well, something had to give. He is gone. The president was making bad calls because he was allowing all these people to be hired. He had to be gone. Neil Huntington was the guy that the center of getting rid of Morton, getting rid of Cole, getting rid of Austin Meadows, getting Chris Archer to suck for this team. He sucked for way too long. He was given way too much freedom. Not a lot of money, but he had to go. Take his assistant with him. No need for him. Ugh, it's disgusting. Glad that we got this all out of the way. What do we got coming in for him?
Ben Sherrington's coming in to be the new general manager. 20 years in baseball, 17 with the Boston Red Sox. He won a World Series as general manager in 2013 and laid the groundwork for the team that he was not a part of, but that won in 2018. He spent the last three seasons, I believe, with the Toronto Blue Jays, where obviously they did not have MLB success, but their minor league pool is ranked third.
It is phenomenal.
So he has done a very nice job building that. I think this is a great guy to come in at this point in time for the Pirates. It's very similar to what he was building in Toronto. If I'm looking at this on a very basic level,
I would say
this is the situation he had in Toronto, fast forwarded a couple years. And if he's got championship experience and is willing to go out, spend a little more money, obviously not entirely his decision to do that, but if he's able to take those steps and bring in some veteran guys or put together a solid team, I mean, this is really the time that the Pirates could contend. To me, with these young guys, no, listen, I'm not saying that they will contend, but I'm saying if I'm looking in the next 10 years, it's the next five as opposed to the five after that, simply because we don't pay people, and right now we have young guys that don't need to be paid. Give them 3 years, and they will need to be paid. So if you want to try to win without breaking the bank, now is the time to do it, and I'm hoping that this is the right guy to make that happen.
Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, Christian Vasquez, Blake Sweetheart, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, all these are young people that were grown throughout the organizations of both Boston and Toronto under the direction of Charrington. His skill is looking at young talent, figuring out who is good, who he can raise through the system. And that was the Pirates' biggest problem these past few years. They made the three straight postseason appearances, but with, yes, mostly in-house talent. But when you look at it, besides those guys that were all primarily drafted before 2010, there's not really been many successes. Garrett Cole was very good with the team, but he has gone so much above what he could have been with us with Houston. Austin Meadows was very good with the team, was let go because it was Neil Huntington's attempt to sacrifice, you know, okay, the fan base wants it. Let's give them the trade that makes them happy. Well, no, you traded for a pitcher who was towards the decline in his career and instead gave up a prospect who was the top prospect for many years. It was really the first top prospect I saw from draft day get grown through our system, only to be shipped off to hit 31 home runs. So we have not hit the mark for growing talent. And whenever you said before, we have an owner who doesn't want to spend money, you have to grow your talent from within. Charrington's the guy to do it. President now is Travis Williams, who I don't think the president has too much of a role over the team. But the one good thing that I like about him was he was with the Penguins a decade ago when they were making their cup runs. So whenever he has this kind of experience in the city, he knows how much sports mean to people in Pittsburgh. We don't really got a lot else going for us. So having all that going for us, he knows how important this stuff is for us. And I think that these are the right people for the right decisions. Now, where do all the pieces fall in after that, though? That's the big question still.
Yes, and that'll be to be decided. Hopefully soon we'll see some things start to change. Another topic in Major League Baseball, and we obviously don't have a lot of time tonight, and we will talk about this more as more details come out about it, but the Houston Astros are in a whole lot of trouble.
Oh, it's bad.
They're being accused of stealing signs in the 2017 season, a season that saw them win the first World Series in franchise history. Allegedly, there was an outfield camera on the catcher stealing signs, a monitor in the dugout hallway, so that the signs could be relayed. I've seen rumors about buzzing bandages to help.
What's that?
I saw that one recently, a Band-Aid that they wear that buzzes to help relay signs. That might not even be true, but I saw something about that. Hitting the trash can is what you're smacking the desk about. They hit the trash can when there was off-speed pitch, left it alone for a fastball to help the hitter in the batter's box approach the pitch appropriately. Alex Cora, the current manager of the Boston Red Sox, is supposed to be a part of this. Former pitcher for the Astros, Mike Fiers, is the one that kind of brought this to light. We've seen an email from a Houston executive that encouraged scouts to steal signs from the stands, recording stuff. They weren't happy about it, but that's what they were asked to do. Previous complaints against the Astros, one filed by the A's in 2018, by the Indians in 2018, led to the Red Sox taking action in 2018, and the Yankees, as recently as this year's playoffs, alleged that they heard whistling from the dugout. So, again, more will come out about this, but this is a mess. And for what it's worth, obviously this would be happening in Houston. They were 8-1 at home in the 2017 playoffs en route to that World Series. So big things are coming, and we will be sure to have more on the show about it when they do.
Yeah, Mike Fiers was on that 2017 Astros team. He kind of broke the article to The Athletic. That was where it was first reported and where it just snowballed from there. You can go on YouTube right now and see videos of it. The one I saw was a very one about it was Evan Gattis for the Astros against Danny Farquhar of the Chicago White Sox. He was irrelevant. That whole thing game was irrelevant. What wasn't irrelevant though was the clear you hear on the trash can when the catcher motions for a changeup. Farquhar caught on. They switched up the signs, but it's clear. It's right there. Like you said, a lot more to come out from this. It's not good. One thing I do have want to add: 2017 postseason stats. Jose Altuve, 472 at home, 143 on the road. Carlos Correa, 371 at home, 211 on the road. Brian McCann, 300 at home, 037 on the road. Home field advantage is one thing, but the way these... This is an incredible level. Whenever the MLB makes their decision, full segment on it. This is just kind of us getting our feet wet, just so you know, we all know about it.
The only other thing I would say about this very quickly, I'm surprised it wasn't caught earlier. And I mean, I guess it takes a confession to really open this investigation, but the fact that there were complaints filed in August of 2018 and the fact that in videos you can audibly hear a trash can being hit consistently on off-speed pitches just seems odd to me that this didn't gain traction, this investigation didn't gain traction at an earlier point, but we're here now and we will see what happens. It's going to be something.
What else has been something has been the start that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl have had this season. Those two of them are just leading the Oilers to new grounds that we have not seen in the past. So far on the season, McDavid has 15 goals, 28 assists, good for 43 points. He trails only teammate Leon Draisaitl, who has 16 goals and 28 assists for 44 points for the tops in the league. That's good enough for 1.87 points per game for McDavid and 1.91 points per game for Draisaitl. These two guys are playing at a ridiculous level. I don't think either of us expected the Oilers to be this good this year. I think you had more faith in them. Was it last year?
Last year I said they'd be a playoff team.
Yeah, last year you said they'd be a playoff team. They were one of the worst teams. I had no aspirations for them this year. However, as it currently sits, they are top of the Pacific Division, 14-6-3, and those two guys are the main reasons. It's not something we've seen in a while.
To be clear, talking about those point totals, the next closest is Brad Marchand at 35. That's a hefty drop-off.
8 points this early in the season.
I would even argue the Oilers should be better than 14-6-3 given the production of these two, but I would have argued that they should have been a playoff team last year with McDavid doing what he did. Regardless, early in their careers, these two guys have been phenomenal. I think Dreisaitl is really still coming into his own. He put up 50 goals last year to be second in the league behind Alex Ovechkin. Certainly, I mean, 16 isn't a huge number, but it could absolutely end up being a number that leads the league for him by the time the season's over. So McDavid's got 415 in 310 games played, 415 points. That's insane. That's just insane. Drysdale's just under a point per game, so McDavid's also a plus 55 in his career. And that kind of sparked us to look a little bit at a hometown duo that we know a lot about, and that's Crosby and Malkin. So go ahead, what do you have for them?
Well, so they pretty much follow the same path trajectory. Crosby and Drysdale started a year before Malkin and McDavid did, respectively. Crosby's first year was significantly better than Drysdale's. He sucked. Drysdale had 9 points in 37 games. A point every four games was bad. Crosby, on the other hand, had 102 points in his first season because he's Sidney Crosby. They are not comparable, though. Crosby's more comparable to McDavid, and McDavid's had a little bit of a slower start, but he's pretty much come into
the injury slowed him down.
The injury slowed down McDavid early on, whereas Crosby got his about at what should have been his peak in the middle years. But the out of the first 6 years that Crosby played, his best points per game was his sixth season. He had 1.61. However, that was 66 points, which you're saying, well, how's he doing that? He's 82 games. He missed over half the season. That was his best season. In his third year, him and Malkin were able to hoist the cup, where the McDavid and Drysdale in their third year was the only year the two have made the playoffs. So maybe this is their year to make the playoffs again, but the Penguins had much more success as a team with these two guys than the Oilers have as a team.
Yeah, and again, we're not comparing them directly to each other because I don't think that does Crosby and Malkin justice. But the biggest difference is the fact that the duo in Pittsburgh had a cup early in their career.
Even a cup loss, too.
And I think that was the reason I had the Oilers being so successful last year, is because it looked like a similar progression. A team that had a lot of early picks for a lot of years, was not good, had an arguably the best player in the league, or what would become that in McDavid, like the Penguins had Crosby, and they missed the playoffs, and they made the playoffs, and at that point, you were hoping to see the Oilers take the next step, when the Penguins did, and the Oilers have not done that yet. But with Dreisaitl coming into his own now, I think that opens up the door a little bit. Regardless of any comparison to anybody, these two are off to a phenomenal start this year. And it's exciting to watch and exciting to see where it takes them and where it takes the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, they're following the same trajectory, though. From their playoff season, McDavid and Dreisaitl both increased their point-per-game totals, goals, and assists. Dreisaitl had 50 last year. He's on his way to over 50 this year. They seem to just be taking a little bit of a delayed reaction, but that's just because Edmonton is a dumpster fire. We had a lot to talk about this week.
A lot. It was a busy show.
So we got quick picks, and we're just going to go quick through them. We're going to do quick picks for both this week and next week. We have 7 total games because we're going to be off the air next week for Thanksgiving, so we're going to include a few games that will come up then. We're going to start with the NFL, Colts at Texans this Thursday. They played earlier in the year, and I said, boy, I'm just going to pick the Colts because they seem to win every other game. Well, Texans lost last week, so I'm going to pick them this week.
I'm going to go with the Texans as well. The Colts have some injuries. The Texans are at home. I'll go with Houston. Packers at 49ers. I'm going to go with the Packers. Aaron Rodgers is there. We've talked about the lack of schedule so far for the Niners, so I think it'll be the Packers this week.
I have the Niners in this one. Packers have struggled against some weaker teams. The defense is not like one Rodgers has seen this year. I like the Niners. Bills at Cowboys in a Thursday Thanksgiving matchup that nobody thought would have any playoff importance going into the season, yet is extraordinarily important for both these teams. I have the Cowboys. Bills are getting exposed by teams who are not terrible every week they play. Cowboys are a decent enough team, I think, them in this one.
I don't love either of these teams, but the Dallas offense is probably the difference maker in this game. I'll go with the Cowboys. Vikings at Seahawks in our final NFL game here. I'm going to go with the Vikings. I like them more. I think they're a more complete team. I'm buying the Seahawks, but I'm buying the Vikings more.
I'm going to go with the Seahawks in this one. I like them. I think they're a little bit of a more complete team. I'm buying the Vikings, but I'm buying the Seahawks just a
all
little
right,
bit more.
All right,
no, but I am actually going with the Seahawks, though, in this one. Moving to college football, Big Ten matchup this week is a top 10 matchup. It's Penn State at Ohio State. Penn State needs to win to have any chance at making the college football playoff, but when they lose to Ohio State, their number 8 chance will be squashed. Ohio State is a team that can win the title. Penn State is no match for them.
Both of these teams need to win this week. I think Ohio State will. They play Penn State very well at home. I think they'll win this week. Number 5, Alabama, and number 15, Auburn. There's no Tua, but I'm going to go with Bama. They were a college football playoff pick of mine from the beginning of the season. I'm going to stick with them, even though Tua is not there.
So the reason I didn't pick Alabama to make the college football playoff earlier in the season was because I thought they would lose to Auburn. So without Tua, that solidifies my thought that Auburn can beat them. I'm going to go with the Tigers in this one. Number 12, Wisconsin. Number 10, Minnesota. It's a matchup that is very important for the Big Ten West. Both these teams are fighting for the top. Minnesota lost to Iowa. They beat Penn State. What kind of team are they? Well, they're a team that can beat Wisconsin. I don't really have anything to back it up. I just think being at home is the difference maker in this one, as I have picked all home teams for this week's pick'ems.
I'm going to go with Minnesota as well. I think they are here for real this year. It'll be a good bounce back game, and it'll get them into the Big Ten title game. Moving into bold predictions very quickly to wrap up the show, I'm going to start in the NHL. I think Evgeny Malkin, in the absence of Sidney Crosby, will be an MVP candidate. He does a very good job to step up when Crosby is out of the lineup. Sid's out 6-plus weeks. Malkin has 11 points in 10 games so far this season. He's also a +1 with only 2 penalty minutes. Good stuff for him so far. I expect it to get better.
+1, 2 penalty minutes. That's not the Malkin we've seen, but it's the Malkin I love to see. I'm going to go to the MLB for my first one. Gerrit Cole, big free agent, probably biggest one out there. Los Angeles Angels, you will be smiling happy in spring training when he is pitching for your team. You heard it here first. That's who he's going to. He likes sunny skies of L.A., went to UCLA. Angels seem to be a good fit for him.
I'll go to the MLB as well. The Pittsburgh Pirates will make the playoffs next season.
Get out of town.
New leadership. It's a whole new era for the Pirates.
God.
I love the young guys that they have in the lineup out in the field. They need to improve the pitching, and I think they'll do it.
Out of everything we say on the show, I think that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard you say.
We will see.
One thing that I don't think is
ridiculous. Bold for a reason.
I don't think this is ridiculous. The Astros are going to get banned from the postseason at least next year. I think there's a very strong possibility it might be 2 or 3 years, depending upon how this investigation goes. But nothing about the investigation I've seen indicates that they are free from any guilt. Watch out, Houston. Your time for World Series is running short.
My last one comes in the National Hockey League, not so much related to what we talked about today. I just figured I'd give one of my favorite players some love. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be a Vezina finalist this year. It would be the first time in his career. I was looking at some numbers. He made a terrific save last night, which is kind of what sparked this for me, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Just absolutely robbed the Maple Leafs, as he's done in the past. It was just fantastic. He's been an elite player since he got to Vegas. He was great in Pittsburgh. He's been even better in Vegas. I think he's finally going to get his chance at a Vezina. He's going to be a finalist this year.
We forgot to mention this before, but that save was against the Toronto Maple Leafs. He also made a big save against the Detroit Red Wings in 2009. Mike Babcock was the coach for both of those teams. Mike Babcock is the coach for neither of those teams now. Babcock was fired from the Maple Leafs earlier today, killed by Fleury once again. My last bold prediction will come to the NFL. It was sparked by the Cowboys and Bills dumpster fire. There's going to be a 9-7 team that makes the postseason this year. There's going to be a 9-7 team that wins one postseason game this year. You heard it here first. We said how good the NFC is. AFC is a little bit worse, so maybe it comes from there. Either way, someone who's 9-7 will be winning a postseason game.
It's going to have to come from the AFC. 9-7 is not getting you anywhere near the playoffs in the NFC. That's all the time that we have. It's all the time that we have for the next couple of weeks. We will not be on the air next week, as it is our Thanksgiving break. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and thanks for tuning in. We will be back on the other side of the holiday. Until then, good night, everybody.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.